This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and I have a guest with me today, and that is Mr. Joe Karsha, NJ1Q. And Joe's title here at ARRL headquarters in Newington is the W1AW Station Manager. But I have a feeling that a lot of you have no idea what W1AW is or why it needs a manager, right, Joe? I mean, tell them it.
Exactly. Well, W1AW is the Maxim Memorial Station. It is named after our founder and first president, Hiram Percy Maxim, who was originally licensed as 1AW. And this station is here in honor of Hiram Percy Maxim.
Right across the parking lot.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
It's a little brick building. If you've ever seen it in any publication, QST or otherwise, or even just online, it's a little brick building. And what we do at the station is we provide code practice and Bolton transmissions over 9 HF and VHF frequencies simultaneously. We do that as a service to all amateur radio operators, not just the membership.
Right.
The station is there for ham radio operators. We also provide 3 spots for visiting hams to come in and operate the station.
Now, before we get on to our primary topic, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up, and that is we have a new podcast coming up. This particular podcast will air on February 28th, or will be released on February 28th. Mm-hmm. The week following, on March 7th, we're going to debut a brand new podcast called So Now What? And you're going to be featured on that podcast.
Yes, I am. So Now What is our new podcast that is directed to brand new amateur radio operators. In this case, specifically technicians, although you can be a brand new general or even an extra class ham, but it's directed to brand new radio operators. And it's going to be very basic in the beginning. Now, you've gone as a ham, you've gone through the licensing process, you've read the manuals and you've taken the test and so on, but a lot of hams find that they just don't know where to start, where to begin. Maybe they're having a problem finding a mentor or a local club. So it's like, well, what do I do? I have this license. It's the proverbial, so now what?
Right. This is really targeting new hams.
This is targeting new hams. So the veteran ham may find our talk a little banal, a little boring.
Because, a little too basic.
Very basic. Because I'm sure in their mind they're saying, yeah, but I already know this stuff. Well, it's not directed towards you. I mean, we would love you to listen, but it's not directed towards you. This is directed towards new hams. And I am the quote-unquote veteran ham that is on this podcast. Michelle Patnode, my partner in crime, her call is Whiskey 3, Mike Victor Papa, is representing the new ham because she is a relatively newly licensed ham who has been active. She has gotten on the air. We actually threw her into the deep end during field day last year. But she, too, is still a new ham. So it's going to be a little bit of a learning experience for her. And I'm going to be there answering questions, talking a little bit about what you can do in ham radio. And, of course, we are also asking for questions from our audience. And we'll try to answer those questions. And while I might be the veteran in this, I'm certainly not the shell answer man. So if we need a question answered, we may go outside. We'll go to the laboratory. We'll go to somebody else here. We'll maybe have guests coming in to answer questions or give some talks about amateur radio or even propagation or contesting.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that, like our other podcasts, listeners can find on iTunes, on Stitcher, if you're an Android user,
yep.
On Blueberry, which
yes.
is our host for the podcast. And I would encourage, personally, I know a lot of our listeners are veteran amateurs. I would encourage them to tell new hams about this thing, tell them about the podcast, and encourage them to go find it and listen to it.
Exactly, because while we're coming up with a format, we're coming up with questions and topics of discussion, the fact remains is we can only come up with so much stuff. We may have a lot of information, but there might be a question out there that we haven't thought of. A new ham could say, well, what about this? And we're thinking, well, yeah, we never thought about that. So let's investigate that, and we'll try to answer the question for them. So we have set up an email address. It's sonowwhat@arrl.org. We also have a web page, which will soon be available, which essentially is off the arrl.org web page. And there's a small form on there that you can use to ask your questions as well.
Excellent. Well, Joe, why don't we move on to our real purpose for being here?
the purpose of being here,
The purpose for being here is to talk about the amazing Raspberry Pi.
I love the Pi.
I love the Pi, yep. Too. I had several during my ham career, mm-hmm. and they haven't been around all that long.
Yep.
For people who have never heard of these things, would it be fair to say, Joe, that the Raspberry Pi is essentially a microcomputer?
Yes.
But it's a full-fledged computer. I mean, it has USB ports. It has an HDMI video port that you can plug into a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a slot for a memory card. Has audio output. I don't know if it has input or not.
Yes.
But it has audio output. If you took this thing backward in time about 10 years... it would probably be as powerful as many of the laptops that were running around at that time.
Exactly. The current model, I believe, is a 3B.
Yes, a 3B.
And I actually have one of the first 3s, the Raspberry 3, which came with built-in Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And essentially it is. It's a very small microcomputer. Now, for those of you who are thinking, great, I can run my Microsoft stuff on it. Well, not necessarily.
Not really, no.
It uses Linux and a form of Linux called Raspbian because it's a Raspberry Pi. Although I'm partial to Blueberry, but you know, Raspberry's still cool.
Raspberry?
Raspberry's good. Raspberry Pi. And it uses a micro SD card, which you have to burn with a Linux image.
Think of it as your hard drive.
Yes, it's the hard drive. You pull that little micro SD card out and the thing's a paperweight.
Yeah.
But you would have to burn the image on the micro USD using Raspbian or Stretch. That's the other one. I believe there is an Ubuntu version. It's all Linux. And you have to kind of know a little bit of Linux to get this thing to work properly. Now, before you think that, oh, great, I have to learn Linux, I have to learn code. Well, that's kind of true to get the thing started.
Somewhat.
Somewhat, but it does have a GUI or a graphic user interface that you can use, and it kind of sort of looks like Windows. So if you're comfortable in that environment, you can do it.
It looks very much like Windows. The first time I ever powered up a Raspberry Pi, I was using, you're right, I was using Raspbian, it's called Raspbian Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse, yep.
And it was on the micro SD card, you're mm-hmm. right. When I powered that thing up, I was astonished at how much it looked like Windows.
Yes.
It really did, and was remarkably easy to use, because mm-hmm. if you've used Windows, you can use this thing, and it has icons on the screen and so on.
Correct. And when it comes to installing software, it's a little hairy because it's not just a standard go to a website and download an executable file and run it and so on and so forth, or even a zip file. But there are certain variations to that when it comes to running software. Now, our listening audience cannot see it, but it's here, honestly. I have my Raspberry Pi. If only I can show you. I have my Raspberry Pi 3. I call it a Pi Top. And what I had done was I had taken an old laptop monitor, bought a video driver card for it on Amazon, hooked that up to my Raspberry Pi, and I have it now running in the background with its GUI interface. And I'm running FL Digi, which is a multi-mode digital program, and I can control that using VNC over my iPhone. So I can actually tell it to run different programs via my iPhone. And it runs as a great amateur radio application because
yes.
It's essentially it is a microcomputer with the USB ports on it and the size of the memory card. You can load a lot of stuff into it. So for those who are experimenting, the Pi is just one way to do it. yes, you have your Arduino out there, you have your regular laptops, your regular computers, but for those who want to play with the Raspberry Pi to see what the applications are, I would recommend they try that.
Now, the Arduino, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Joe, the Arduino, powerful and capable as it is really just a processor, whereas the Raspberry Pi, once again, is a full-fledged, real computer.
Exactly. With an Arduino, you can run switching programs. You can have it swap antennas and change relays, and you can have it control all sorts of different things. You can have it monitor signal levels and voltage levels and so on. And that's where the Arduino was powerful. Here, you're actually looking at a small microcomputer.
Yes.
And if you don't mind putting all the extra stuff to it, like a keyboard, like a
monitor. Well, I was going to get to that. Yes.
Mine, and this is the cool thing about the current technology, it doesn't have a keyboard, obviously, but it has multiple USB ports. And you can plug in a mouse, you can plug in a keyboard, or you can do like what I had done, get a wireless keyboard and mouse, put the little dongle in there, and now I can control it from up to 32 feet.
I believe the Raspberry Pi 3B has Bluetooth on it already.
Yes. The one I have, which is the 3, has Bluetooth built into it.
So you could use a wireless keyboard, wireless mouse right there with it.
Correct. Yes. You would have to compile it in there and set it up to where it sees that Bluetooth keyboard and
yes.
mouse. Yep.
Now, you will need a monitor of some
Correct.
Sort.
Yes.
And that might be the most expensive part of the whole package. I don't mean to scare anyone away. I'm just saying you need, at the very least, some sort of small monitor that you can plug into it. But then monitors are getting awfully inexpensive nowadays.
Exactly. The only thing is that it has to be an HDMI monitor.
Yes, must be HDMI.
Correct. Or if you don't have an HDMI monitor, you can always get the HDMI to VGA converter.
Yes.
And plug that in and use a VGA monitor. And that'll work just as well. I've done that in the past, and the video is just as clean as if you had a regular HDMI monitor.
Right.
For the one I have here, the video driver board has HDMI and VGA and actually composite. So all I've done is I've just plugged the Pi into that controller board, and then it's just dumping the video up onto the screen.
Okay. Joe, let's take a break for a second. We will come back and talk about the economics of the Pi, so to speak.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a Balin and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment. Get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back. And as promised, when I said economics, I mean, you know, the basics. How much does this thing cost? And it's actually remarkably inexpensive. I think the peripheral stuff, the monitor, might be more expensive than the Pi itself. I've seen it on Amazon in the form of kits.
Yes.
By kits, now, I don't mean that you assemble the Pi, but I mean a kit where it comes with a little power supply, mm-hmm. the Pi itself, a little cabinet or enclosure to put the Pi in, and sometimes even the micro SD cards are included with that. Yep. Correct me here, Joe, but I've seen those, I think in the vicinity of $70 for the whole thing. Is that right?
If that, yes. When I purchased mine, I got mine through Amazon. It was $35.
$35?
It was $35. But
wow.
It was just the Pi and the little plastic case it comes in. Now, I had to go out and I bought an SD card. And depending upon what you want to do, you might be able to get away with maybe an 8-gig SDI card. I have in mind a 64-gig because I knew I would be installing a number of amateur radio applications.
That's what I did, too.
So I got a large card, and that works great. But between the card, and it's hard to pick a price on that because I can go to Staples, get an Amazon, you can go to Walmart. There's a number of places where you can buy these. Well, it's the micro SD card.
Yes.
But it's so you can't say, well, it's definitely going to cost you this much. But if you have the monitor ready, VGA or HDMI, and the Pi, and you don't mind running a wireless keyboard, or if you have a regular wired keyboard and mouse, it's, I would say, under $100.
Oh, for easily, all of it, yes.
Easily. It's
yeah, depending on the monitor. That might correct. Be, again, the, I mean, if you want something nice, if you want a 20-inch, 30-inch monitor, then yeah, you're going to pony up about $200 or more for that.
Exactly, yes.
But if you want something small, I've seen on Amazon, mm-hmm. I've seen 7 or 10-inch HDMI monitors going for about $100 now.
Yes. And the nice thing about the Pi is that you can actually buy a small 7-inch touchscreen.
Yes, I forgot to mention that.
That connects right to the Pi.
Yes.
And you can kind of control it like your phone, your iPhone or your, I shouldn't say iPhone. I should say, what is it, electronic device?
mobile device.
mobile device. You can control it like your mobile device or an iPad or anything like that with the touchscreen.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about the Pi is that it doesn't necessarily use the HDMI port. There's actually two slots that are on the Pi where you would actually plug these screens into because you are using the touchscreen aspect of it.
Yes.
And you can buy these plastic housings that have the Pi installed inside of it, and then the monitor, that small screen, fits on top of that.
So you're, oh, that's very cute.
So you're looking at this little, it's cute. It's very cute. You're looking at this little Pi with a little 7-inch touchscreen, and you can just kind of sit there and do the stuff you need. Obviously, it's going to use its power supply. It's a 5 volts, the micro USB, which kind of plugs in off the side. So you're going to be tethered that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you essentially have this small little portable computer in front of you, and you can even pull up the keypad, or the keyboard, I should say, with the Pi on that screen.
And when we say small, I mean, tell them, it's about, what, 3 by 4 inches, something like that?
Yeah, it's about 3 by 4 inches, very low profile. Now, there are a few things. If you think back to your mobile device, I'll get the right terminology this time, or your computer, they have internal clocks, so the clock setting is automatically done for you. With the Pi, there is no way for it to do that. On its own, if it's just sitting there, it doesn't keep time. That being said, you can get a small hat, the Pi clock, that plugs into the expansion pins on top of it.
Now, when you say hat, what do you mean?
The hat is the
it's not a fedora.
Not a fedora. It's a very small board, which they used to call them shields, which fits right over the pins that are on there. There's 26-pin card. And essentially what this does, this sends keying signals and information to the Raspberry Pi. And it's a very small board that has a small battery on it that essentially keeps the time. And that keeps the time for the Pi. So every time you turn on the Pi, it looks to that board and says, oh, okay, here's the current time, and it sets itself. Now, the nice thing about the Pi is, let's assume that you have it connected and it knows a Wi-Fi someplace, your home or your office. When it boots up, it will look for a time server and adjust its time. Well, what if you're not in the proximity of a Wi-Fi system, but you need it to keep time? You're out in the field. Well, having this little Pi clock attached keeps that time for you.
Yes. And time is critical when you're running something like FT8.
Correct.
Or Whisper or one of the WSJTX modes, I should say.
Correct, yes.
You were mentioning something earlier briefly about audio, and I don't know if you wanted to return to that. A question about the Pi and audio interfacing.
Correct, yes. On the Pi, there is a small 1/8-inch stereo jack, which is used for audio out. And that's great if you want to listen to something. And I believe you can assign it. If you said, well, I need an audio in, you have to go into the settings to say this is like an input line. But if you're running a digital mode, like FT8 or even PSK31, you really can't use that single jack because it has to be either or. It can't be both at the same time. And it would be hard to configure the program to say, well, on this moment it's line in, on this moment it's line out. So you have to consider using an external sound card. And what I have on mine is the little USB sound card that just kind of plugs in there, and it gives me a line in and a line out. Specifically, this gives me a microphone in and a line out. So now if I want to run digital modes, I can just make my two connections to that little USB sound card and not have to worry about assigning that secondary port for either line in or line out.
One approach I also used was I use with my Pi a USB sound device, one of those little tiny USB sound devices.
Yes.
And I plugged it into the USB port, and then I had a sound device for both in and out, which was convenient.
Yes, and that's what I have on mine, yes.
Before we get to the end, I want to ask the obvious question. For amateur radio applications, I already have a desktop computer or a laptop computer. Why should I care about the Pi?
Because it's cool. And I know that sounds corny, but it's all part of that experimentation. I mean, that's what keeps amateur radio alive. At least it's one of the things it does, is the ability for us to evolve and to experiment with all this new technology and see how we can incorporate it into amateur radio. In my case, yes, I have a laptop that I can bring with me. I have a desktop that I can use. But with the Pi, not only is it a great demonstration piece, especially if you're out in the field, but it's just that technology that we're adapting for amateur radio use.
Yes.
And thankfully, like with when the personal computer first hit homes, ham radio operators said, oh, we definitely have to marry this into amateur radio. They did that with the Pi.
Yes.
And there are dozens and dozens of software packages built specifically for the Raspberry Pi. The other cool thing about it is it's all free because it's all open source. You do not have to pay a registration. It's not a demo or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's
no cost free. For the software.
No cost for the software. And this stuff actually does work. Now, mine, I'm currently using FL Digi, which is a multi-mode program. Granted, it is the Linux version, but it's the Linux version that works just fine on the Raspberry Pi.
So you could use that to run anything from PSK31 to
CW, Feldhell, if you want to play with that,
yep.
Olivia, MFSK16, any one of the current digital modes supported by FL Digi, you can run on the Raspberry Pi. Now, you had mentioned FT8 earlier, and
yes.
It's WSJTX. I run that on this Pi, too. Only thing is that you have to be careful about what version of Linux you're running. With the current version of WSJTX, which is version 2.0, it will not run properly on earlier flavors of, say, the Raspbian, like Jesse. I found, and I only found this out because I went on groups and said, why can't I run the current version of WSJTX on my Pi? It seems that it needs Stretch, which is another version of the Raspbian software.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. There's a few ways you can do it. You can either burn a new micro SD card, or if you're brave like me, just try to overwrite it and hope for the best, and which I was able to. I was able to pretty much overwrite the operating system while the Pi was running into this Stretch version, and then I can install WSJTX version 2.0 and run FT8. Now, that kind of goes back to that whole issue with the time syncing, because for those in our audience who know about the JT modes and FT8, it is extremely time critical.
Oh, you bet.
You can't be, what, a second off if that?
Yeah, I mean, preferably about a half a second.
Half a second,
yes.
So you want to make sure that the time is always in sync, and that's where that Pi clock really helps.
I've heard of some hams who are dedicating their Raspberry Pi to Whisper.
Yes.
They're running propagation beacons, or they're receiving Whisper with their Raspberry Pi, and that frees up their primary computer, their laptop or their desktop, for other uses. So that's really a very practical application of the Pi.
It is. In fact, not to brag, but about 2 years I was tasked with developing a Whisper transmitter that we can send out for portable use. And it's built into a nice little yellow Pelican-style case. It has a 12-volt, 70-amp-hour battery associated with it. And when the thing boots up, it will automatically run the Whisper program on 20 meters.
Oh.
So all I have to do is, if we know it's going to be sent off to some place, I have to configure the program with the grid square and how much power you want to run and so forth. And it just does it on 20 meters. In the Pi itself, I have both the Pi clock because of the time, but I also have the 20 meter hat, which is the filter, because this thing will essentially transmit across the band.
It
kind of sets this frequency.
It's
but kind of
a signal generator. Yeah,
exactly. And it can be used as a signal generator.
Yes.
But that 20 meter Pi, the hat actually, fits right over it. It fits over the Pi clock, and that acts as a filter, so our transmissions are pretty much just within the 20 meter whisper frequency, and it's all in milliwatts, really.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. It's been very informative.
You're most welcome.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.